leaving New York City. In case you missed this week, we absolutely have nothing to talk about this week. Nothing happened. It's going to be a very long show of absolutely nothing. Peyton Manning went nowhere. Tim Tebow retired.
We're going to have badminton scores,
it's
going to
be awful. No, we actually have incredibly a lot to talk about. March Madness isn't the only thing in the headlines. And we got Bruce Hall out in Arizona for spring training. Bruce, how are you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great considering I've been up at 4 a.m. every morning out here. When you're on East Coast time, it's pretty tough to switch over to West Coast time if you're not a hardcore partier and you go out until about 3 or 4 in the morning and kind of get accustomed to the time change. But besides being below freezing when I landed, and in the mountains 2.5 hours from here in Flagstaff, they got 2 feet of snow when I got in last Saturday or Sunday. Now it's 83 degrees and beautiful every day. I mean, there's hardly a cloud in the sky. Getting to see a lot of baseball, getting to talk to a lot of baseball players. I'll be honest with you, it's hard to get super excited for ball games when you've been at spring training, because it's spring training, especially with a press pass. I mean, you get to talk to everybody. You're so close to everything. And besides that, Boch always leaves me a really good ticket in the first row next to the dugout. I don't even like to be in the press box.
When you say Boch, you mean Bruce Bochy.
Yeah.
For all those listening.
Bruce Bochy, the manager of the San Francisco Giants, world champion 2010 San Francisco Giants. Buster Posey's healthy. We're going to talk about that towards the end of the show. We're also going to play my interview with Boch towards the end of the show. How's that, Matt, for a teaser? Is that pretty good?
You're a master at radio.
I'm becoming a master at radio at 58.
Oh, look, I'm not a tease.
Hey, listen, evidently I'm not a master of the press box, because
I'm sure you've been thrown out of many a press box.
No. I've never been in one until last yesterday for the afternoon game. It was a split squad of Giants, basically 4 or 5 starters and a bunch of minor league kids playing, because, you know, we've got less than a week left. We've got like 4 days left. Every day they send more kids back to AAA and AA. They're making their final cuts for their final 25-man roster, active roster. And they're getting their 40-man roster in line. They're fine. They've got, I mean, we'll talk, like I said, it's hard not to talk about baseball in Arizona. But let me tell you my story about the press box. Roy, I wish you'd been with me. You'd love this. You know, there's certain guys on Twitter that I tweet all the time that are San Francisco beat writers. And one of them is a real nice guy, and I'm going to give a shout-out to him. His name's Hank Shulman. He might be listening this morning, but Henry Shulman is a good writer. He's a great guy. He kind of reminds me of, like, you know, Feinstein. He's one of those guys. He's the smartest guy in the room, and he knows it, and that's okay. I love him anyway. But the thing of it is that I'm a San Francisco fan first and foremost, because wherever Boch goes, I'm a fan. When he was in San Diego for 20 years, I was a Padre fan. Now that he's in San Francisco, I'm a Giant fan. So I'm sitting up there. I got a great seat, and I'm sitting next to a really, really nice guy, fantastic sports writer named Andrew Baggerty. And he has a column that goes all over the country regularly. I think you can get him at CSN Bags, and he BAGGS, not 1G, and he's sitting next to me, and somebody hits a line drive in the first. Now the Giants have only scored one run in 2 games, so we're looking for some production yesterday, and I'm in the press box, and I'm sitting there, and it's a beautiful day, and there's probably 50 people in the press box, and 20 of them are scouts, and the guy hits a line drive into right center field. And like I do all the time when I'm managing, sitting on a bucket, coaching a college wooden bat team in the Cal Ripken Collegiate Baseball League up in D.C. Baltimore area in the summer, which I do, the manager and the owner of the Vienna River Dogs, I say, and I repeat, and I want you to understand what I say, get down, ball, get down. Well,
that's
about 30 seconds later, some big chubby guy comes over and taps me on the shoulder, and it's Hank Shulman. And he goes, was that you that said, get down, get down? And I went, yeah, that was me. Why? He goes, we're not allowed to.
Yeah, you
to,
can't cheer.
We can't root for anybody in here. I just wanted you to know that. And I went, oh, okay, my bad. I'm a 58-year-old rookie. Thanks. So the rest of the day, I didn't cheer for the Giants, and they lost by one run. But I learned that you don't cheer for anybody. However, by doing that, he made me the smartest guy in the room, because what I did was I took over in there, and I did the color and the play-by-play and discussed every single swing. And the guy next to me, Baggerty, loved it. He was laughing half the time. And the guy on the other end, he'd say something, and I wouldn't even act like I heard him. You know what I mean? So anyway, that's my press box story.
Yeah, being in the press box kind of, I mean,
it's
takes
weird.
It takes the fun out of the game. I mean, it makes you, you know, have to actually pay attention to little things and pick your favorite teams apart, and it's hard.
I actually have a press box story that's similar.
Who is this? Who is this person?
This is Mike Lynch.
hey, Mike Lynch. I know you. Go ahead, Mike.
So I 2 years ago, I was doing stuff for DC United, and I was in the press box, and I actually got accused of cheering for DC United when it was like a guy two chairs down from me, and they kept thinking that I was the one that was cheering for him. And so I kept getting scolded by team management for cheering. I'm like, I'm just sitting here watching the game and writing notes. So.
What you needed to do, Matt, was do that
little cronyism, a little bit that goes in.
Yeah,
there,
but what you got to do, what you needed to do is do that little head pointing thing where you kind of look at the guy and go like that.
Yeah, it's the arm over the head like you're stretching.
Yeah,
and you're pointing.
It's this guy. Huh, it's this guy right here.
Oh, that guy over there.
Hey, by the way, I'm Bruce Hall, and I'm up early in Phoenix, Arizona. Really, I'm in Scottsdale. I'm going to give these guys a free plug. Maybe they'll buy me dinner. I'm staying at the Orange Tree Golf Resort and Spa right off of 56th Street and Shea Boulevard. And I'll tell you what, it's one of the nicest looking golf courses I've seen. And guess how many rounds I've played, Roy?
How many?
Zero.
That's
haven't gotten to play any because I'm out of here. I'm telling you, it's 6:30. I'm over there. I've been going to bed at 10, 11. I can't stay up past 10. I tried to watch Saturday Night Live. Didn't happen. Who is that?
Who's what?
I heard something ding. I wonder if that – Matt, I wonder if that's that thing was, we
– Yeah, that's your chat.
Are
Don't
you
worry
feeling
about
okay?
it. Keep going.
Oh, that's a little chat ding?
You are.
I love that. I'm
technology,
Bruce Hall.
Nothing. You don't miss anything with technology.
I don't miss
anything. Do
I just got a hearing test, and I passed with flying colors. Hey, Roy.
Yes.
Let's tell them what we're going to talk about today.
Well, today we obviously have a little bit of Peyton Manning talk to deal with, that going down in Denver. We also got some Tim Tebow, the aftermath of Peyton Manning going to the New York Jets, 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 Jets.
We're going to have plenty to talk about during the season.
We got the Sean Payton suspension and the whole Bounty Gate thing that went down in New Orleans.
Sinner!
And the ripples of the, if there's going to be any ripples, to the Jacksonville Jaguars and Washington Redskins. We got a little bit of March Madness to talk about, just a little bit. I mean, there's nothing really going on in college basketball these days. but we
Hey,
do.
How about no Giant news, is there? Not really.
The Giants, well, that I feel like that's the way the Giants like it. Stay off the back pages.
Absolutely.
Win the Super Bowl, do things right. Although, I'm going to get a lot into the Giants today. For different reasons.
Okay.
But March Madness, we got March Madness going on. Ohio State to the Final Four. Louisville
You're
to the Final
happy.
Four. I'm very happy with Ohio State. Then we got the UNC-Kansas game today. And then we got Kentucky playing today as well. And then we'll get into a little bit of NBA as well.
My Jayhawks will prevail.
No, they won't.
Yes, they will. They're going to lose next week, maybe. But I tell you what, either Ohio State or Kansas wins, it's not going to be Kentucky.
I hope you're
Because John Calipari's not capable of winning a championship. Something's going to happen.
I'm pretty sure I said that.
The only thing I can figure is maybe there is a conspiracy theory at work here.
Well, we're going to take a break real quick.
We are?
Yes, we are. Catch us on the other side, guys. Like we said, we were going to be talking Peyton Manning, Tim Tebow, New York football in general, March Madness, Syracuse taking a bad loss last night, and a little bit of NBA. Stick with us, guys. We'll be right back. This is AM 1230 WFAS. Here we go.
Ho!
Wait, we have a live
read. For the first time in generations, the dream of home ownership is being threatened. Realtors, members of the National Association of Realtors, are here to represent you and protect home ownership. And we're back here on AM 1230 WFAS New York. This is Bruce Hall, Second Opinion. I'm Roy G here with Bruce, who, well, not here with Bruce. He's out in Arizona at the Cactus Leagues. So, Bruce, we're back.
Hello.
Welcome back, Bruce.
Yeah, tell Matt to never play that song again so I have to listen to it for a minute.
More human than the human?
Because those sounds that guy or girl were making there at the end were very distracting.
I'm so sorry. I totally forgot about that part. I just remember the
forgot about the intro.
Slide.
Can I tell you what? I'm sitting here.
I'm so sorry, Kyle.
I haven't seen my wife in almost 2 weeks, and you're playing some woman making sounds.
Nah.
I didn't appreciate it.
She was scared. She was
let me just tell you this. I'd have been there to help her if she needed help. This is Bruce Hall. Hall's Second Opinion, and I'm with Roy G on the phone. Roy's taking care of things in the home studio with Matt Lynch,
always,
our producer. Hey, listen, I got to say something before we get into what we were going to get into.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen this girl from Baylor, Brittany Griner?
Of course I've seen Brittany Griner.
Can I tell you something? She is like heads and shoulders above 99% of the men out there, but I'm not worried about it. I mean, she's obviously an MVP, and they're going to win everything, and
maybe.
That's great.
I mean, I'm pretty sure she's a junior. She's either a junior or a senior. She's been there. I mean, they made runs last season and didn't win it. So,
have you heard her interviewed yet?
Yeah,
she has a lower voice than I do.
I'm just being honest.
I thought that they were, you know, because I'm sitting here getting ready for the show. Excuse me, I'm getting ready for the show, and I got SportsCenter on behind me, and I'm listening to all this stuff, trying to take in two things at once. And I heard an interview, and I thought that was like her brother talking about her, and it was her. And so all I'm saying is, wow, you know, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that goes on from a standpoint of. When she obviously has quite a few male hormones to be 6'8" to begin with, and to be able to slam it home with two hands, and I gotta tell you something, I am a big fan of hers. I love to watch her play.
Yeah, she's awesome.
She takes an energy with her like nobody else. Now there was a girl in the WNBA. Mm-hmm. I had you're gonna don't laugh at me, and New Yorkers don't turn me off because I had season tickets. I had a little girl that played basketball. And I had season tickets on the floor, center court. Same seats that cost $10,000 or, you know, $10,000 a seat in the Garden, $60 a piece in Verizon Center in D.C. for the WNBA.
For the Mystics.
And they actually went up to $90 eventually. But I got to tell you, I enjoyed my play there. There was a girl, and I think she just died. Her name was Dudek. She was 7 feet tall. And I spoke to her one time. She was very nice. She came over and signed an autograph for my daughter. She couldn't play. She didn't have much game. Hell, it was hard enough for her just to walk around being 7 feet tall with the musculature that she had. But she talked like, you know, you wouldn't know she was 7 feet tall. This Griner girl, I tell you, man, she is a beast. She's very good. So anyway, let's get on, Roy. What do you want to talk about first?
Well, after that story, I don't know how we can even top
that. Well, I mean, all I can do is speak the truth. That's
she
all
was,
I can do.
She was seven. I just actually just looked her up just because I didn't believe you. But, yeah, she was 7 foot two, played for the LA Sparks. So
Yeah. You know what? It's amazing how much you don't know, Roy.
When it comes to the WNBA, there is a lot that I don't know.
You don't know anything about people that played before 1995. Hey, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
We went over this little court.
Oh, did we just lose Bruce? That's okay. I'm going to get into...
We kind of knew that was...
That's all right. I am not worried about it because I've been fully prepared to absolutely talk about and blow up Tim Tebow. And I would rather do it without Bruce right now, so that's okay. So the first thing that I have to say about this whole New York Jets Tim Tebow signing is that I don't understand why New Yorkers are this up in arms. I've been listening to New York radio all week. I've been reading New York paper, Post. I've been reading it all. I don't understand why everyone's so sensitive about Mark Sanchez right now. Now, this is the same Mark Sanchez that everyone wanted out last season. He had a decent year last year. He had an okay season. He put up similar numbers to a guy named Joe Flacco, who plays in Baltimore, who his agent calls him a top five quarterback. So you're going to tell me that Mark Sanchez, who last year threw for 3,474 yards, 26 touchdowns, you're going to tell me that this guy, who put up the same numbers as Joe Flacco last year, you guys wanted him out while he was doing it. Now, all of a sudden, you guys bring in a guy named Tim Tebow, who destroyed the combine when he came through, is a freak of an athlete, was the face of the NFL last season. You bring in this guy to give your Mark Sanchez a little bit of competition, something that he hasn't had since he's been in the NFL. You had a guy named Mark Brunell as his backup, who is living in an old man's home because he can't take care of himself, let alone play NFL football. This was your backup last year to Mark Sanchez. Now you bring in Tim Tebow, an actual backup, someone who was a first-round draft pick with the Broncos, someone who gives you more than just being a bench sitter clipboard holder, in that he can bring you the Wildcat, which, by the way, New York Jets fans, the New York Jets 2 seasons ago, when they had a guy named Brad Smith, who was a fourth-round draft pick, yes, a fourth-round draft pick, something that you just gave up to get Tim Tebow. Sound familiar? Yeah. Brad Smith, a fourth-round draft pick, ran the Wildcat 2 years ago, and the New York Jets, Jets were the number two team in the league running the Wildcat. So you're going to tell me now, you bring in Sperano, the mastermind introducer of the Wildcat to the NFL, as your new OC. Schottenheimer's out. Sperano's in. Rex Ryan ran the Wildcat before Sperano even got here, as I just mentioned, more so than any other team in the league. Well, they were number two overall. And now you bring in the mastermind of the Wildcat, and you think that it's just going to disappear? You think that Tim Tebow bringing him in isn't going to use him in the Wildcat? I mean, Brad Smith could barely throw the football. So now you're going to add Tim Tebow to this, who can throw the football. I mean, the guy is a weapon. The guy, if you thought you had red zone problems with Mark Sanchez, I mean, God bless Tim Tebow. Here he comes. He is a red zone weapon. I don't understand how this is a bad move. I don't understand how anyone can possibly boo this. Yes, you're going to get the freak show. Yes, there's going to be people there who are going to be booing when Mark Sanchez throws three interceptions in a game. Yes, they're going to be calling for his head. But New York
fans... Will there be a billboard?
Yes, there'll be a billboard. But New York...
Just one or two.
New York fans, you were going to boo Mark Sanchez anyways. If Mark Sanchez was going to go throw three interceptions in a game, you were going to go call for Drew Stanton. That was going to happen. So to act like, oh, it's Tim Tebow. Yeah, you might call for Tim Tebow's name a quarter early, but nobody liked Mark Sanchez in a Jets uniform last year. So why does this change all of a sudden? Why does everyone love this guy just because you brought in Tim Tebow, who made noise all last year? By the way, he did win a playoff game for the Broncos over the Steelers. So why is everybody hating this? Do we have a call?
We got a caller. Yeah. Hello.
Hey.
This is Chad from New Rochelle.
Hey,
how
Bruce.
Are you?
Bruce is back. I guess we picked him back up. Bruce, you're just jumping in my rant here.
I'd like to know where that guy went that was on just a minute ago. No, go ahead, man. What were you talking about?
You didn't listen to any of that, Bruce? Well, good.
How could I listen? Are you kidding me? I was too busy getting
Well, you
back
can
home.
Listen on www.sportsmancave.com. Click
we
here
just
to listen.
Had a little,
do you have the TuneIn Radio app?
TuneIn Radio app.
On Android and iPhone?
That's right.
Quiet.
Search for WFAF.
You can also listen at brucehallsports.com. Is there any other ways that we can listen, Bruce?
No. Hey, everybody I tell them to listen to my website or your website.
Well, Bruce, what we need
about $10 million, and we'll go across the country and on billboards we put our websites, and that's it. And then we'll have so many people following us and listening to the show, and you know, and when the big boys come after us and want us to be on, we're not going to do it. We're just going to do it our way.
Right.
Hey, listen, talk to me. Were we talking about NFL? What were you talking about?
I was talking about Tim Tebow.
Oh, well, you know what? I was going to guess you were talking about your brother.
Of course I was talking about Tim Tebow, man. And what I was talking about was Mark Sanchez, and that people were going to boo this guy anyways. Nobody liked him last year. People were calling for his name last year. The backup quarterback in any town is always the most popular guy, except in New York, because it was a guy named Mark Brunell who nobody else wanted but the Jets.
Okay, listen. Before you go on, let's just assume that this has actually been thought out and planned in advance. Where was the biggest problem all year with a starting quarterback and a backup where everybody screamed for the backup, everybody put bulletin boards up for the backup, everybody prayed for the backup?
Okay, so... Billboards aside, there were multiple teams last year who had quarterback controversies that were screaming for their backup. It happened in Washington.
Was John Beck.
It doesn't matter. That's my point.
Real NFL quarterback. We're talking about Mark Sanchez, number one draft choice. Well, first round draft choice, yeah. New York Jets. Takes him to two AFC championship games. Granted, he didn't take him. Their defense did, in my opinion. Okay. And their running game.
Well, yeah, that's what it was.
Now we have a guy that I've already said will be in the Hall of Fame one day. And, you know, one day people will go, how did you know that? I'll go, because I got the Sporting News in November of 2011 and saw that his name was the only name out of hundreds of football players that were listed that wasn't an All-Pro or a Hall of Famer.
Mm-hmm.
So I figured he'd be one since he was ranked the number one quarterback all time in college football. Now, generally speaking, those guys make pretty good football players. The problem that Tebow has, honestly, is he lives in a society with a bunch of sinners. No, I'm just kidding. I feel sorry for the Mark Sanchez. He's done.
Adam Schefter went on the radio this week.
He's done.
And went on ESPN this week and said that he wouldn't be surprised if one of these guys were gone next year. Now, if Mark Sanchez is the guy who's going to lead to the Jets the promised land, if he's the guy who deserved that extension, if he's the guy who's going to lead to the Jets the Super Bowl, then there's no problem with bringing in Tim Tebow as your backup. If Mark Sanchez just goes out and lights it up this year, the New York fans are not like Bronco fans, okay? They're realistic people. New York fans, they may be crazy. There's going to be those Tebow crazy people out there. But New York fans will boo anybody. They don't care who you are. They want results. They booed Derek Jeter, for God's sake. I mean, if Mark Sanchez goes out and lights it up, then there's no problem. Mark Sanchez is our guy. Congratulations, you brought in Tim Tebow. You can run the Wildcat.
Roy, let me throw something in here real quick. You know, it's not so much New York. It's just the nature of professional sports nowadays. I mean, you know, you and I both know who should have made the play for this guy. And they could have spent. Listen, Elway traded him so fast.
And we're back, New York, after slight technical difficulties here on AM 1230 WFAS.
And I think the Jets were running interference on our show.
Yeah, maybe. And I just want to say something real quick. For the first time in generations, the dream of home ownership is being threatened. Realtors, members of the National Association of Realtors, are here to present you and protect your home ownership.
Let me tell you something, Roy. There's over 1.2 million realtors in the world. And if it wasn't for realtors, there would never be anything that moves, to be honest with you. Anyway, I'm a realtor. I've been a broker for 26 years, as a matter of fact. That way, when I buy and sell a piece of property, guess what? I get to sign my name on it, and I get paid. I don't have to worry about it. This is Bruce Hall. This is Bruce Hall's second opinion. Roy G's on the other side. Roy, we were talking about the Jets, Tim Tebow, Mark Sanchez. You know, I don't want to spend too much time on it because we're going to be beating that to death come August, September. As a matter of fact, Sanchez might even be gone, but you don't know who's going to be gone.
Sanchez is not going anywhere, man.
Yeah, but here's what I'm saying. This was the point you were trying to make, and you did make to me, and I appreciate that. The thing that is if Mark Sanchez is your guy, why don't you go get Tim Tebow? He's not going to be a backup, but for about four games. Because Mark Sanchez will start out 1-3 or 2-2, and he'll have a quarterback rating of, 42 in one or two of the games, and everybody's going to want Tebow. And I'm telling you, if you think it was loud in Denver, wait till you hear the Big Apple screaming for the guy.
Well,
don't you think?
I mean, yeah, but what I was trying to say was. If Mark Sanchez is your guy, if this is the guy who's supposed to do everything for you, he's your franchise quarterback, then put up some numbers, Mark. Last year, he put up okay numbers. I mean, we had what, four quarterbacks throw for 5,000 last year? One of which, who was pretty darn close to it, it plays for the other New York team. And when I say other New York team, I mean the New York Giants.
The New York Giants.
So
the 2012 world champion New York Giants.
So if everything's going to be compared to the New York Giants, the other guy in town, which, get a quarterback. Which, by the way, everyone's saying the New York Giants would never make a move like this. The New York Giants do everything right, blah, 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 blah. Well, if the New York Giants do everything right, then people only think about here and now. Yes, the Giants won the Super Bowl last year. But where were they the 2 years before that? They weren't in the playoffs. They've only made the playoff. They made the playoffs one time in the past 3 years. Where the New York Jets have made the playoffs twice in the past three years. Last year was the first time they missed it. Whereas they went to the AFC Championship game the last 2 years with this guy Mark Sanchez at the helm. So
Roy, I think what's happening is you make a good point. Yeah, put up some numbers because this probably is Mark Sanchez's. If they don't go back to the playoffs this year, if they finish 8-8 again, I think we're looking at maybe more changes than just Mark Sanchez. Rex Ryan might be looking at a change.
And does anyone have a problem with that? Does anyone have a problem with getting rid of a mediocre quarterback? I mean, the guy is okay. Look,
I don't have a problem getting rid of a mediocre defensive coordinator / head coach.
I like Rex, but
I know you do. But you got to understand something. If he goes 8-8 again with a good defense and a revamped offense and a new offensive coordinator in Tony Sperano, which honestly I think will make a big difference, because I don't think the guy that was there was doing that good of a job anyway. I mean, he's gone. He's got another job, but Who cares? You know what I mean? This is Bruce Hall. You're listening to Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. I'm in Scottsdale, Arizona, watching spring training. Sooner or later, I think everybody's going to be out here. I know the Nats. I know the Mets are in Florida. The Yankees are in Florida. A lot of the East Coast teams are in Florida, but a lot of teams are out here out west. And I'll tell you what, I know why. The weather's beautiful, not very much rain. Pretty every day, and we're going to be talking about baseball in the second hour of the show. But I'm going to give you some NBA scores. And Roy, you're a big NBA guy. You love the NBA, and I'm going to read out some scores from last night, and just some things that went on in the NBA because I'm becoming a big NBA fan again. There's only so many things you can be great at. Okay, I don't want to start handicapping the NBA like I did 20, 25 years ago, but it's hard not to when you see some of the games and some of the scores. The Knicks won again. Yes, they got back on a winning gang. I love their new coach. Mike Woodson, in my opinion, is a very good coach. I mean, I think this guy is around to stay. It's like you said last week, Roy, it's my way or the highway. You play defense or you don't play. And that's what he's doing. Hell, they didn't even really put up big numbers. They just won by 22 points. Now, they did, they did beat the Pistons.
The Pistons are terrible.
Yeah, they are. But
that's not to say that's not to say that the Knicks aren't playing good basketball right now, because they are playing very good basketball under Mike Wooten.
Tyson Chandler had a great game. He had 15 points and 17 rebounds to lead the Knicks. This game was over early. The Clippers beat Memphis. Now, I like Memphis, but they're probably not going to go deep if they go at all in the playoffs this year.
I like Memphis.
Yeah, I do too. I like the Clippers. They had lost four in a row or three in a row, and they just won last night. They beat Memphis 101-85. They jumped out to a 16-point lead after one quarter and held on pretty much there. Blake Griffin, who's getting a lot of pub, had 20 points, 10 rebounds. Chris Paul had 19 points and 13 assists. Roy, what do you think about the Clippers?
The Clippers are, I mean, they're a very good basketball team. I mean, they're a force to be reckoned with in a very weak West. I mean, there's the Lakers out there. There's OKC, which the Lakers made a pretty big move that nobody's really talking about. A guy named Ramon Sessions, who played for the Cleveland Cavaliers, who is balling right now for the Lakers. I mean, when he played for the Cavaliers, nobody plays for the Cavaliers. They have Kyrie Irving, and that is it. That is a disgrace of a basketball team, very similar to the Washington Wizards, who have John Wall, and that is it. So when you move a guy like Ramon Sessions out of Cleveland, you put him in a Lakers team where he actually has talent, the kid's starting to work and he's starting to look good. Another big move that is very assimilated with the Lakers is a guy named Derek Fisher, who's a president of the Players League. He got sent to the Rockets, then said he didn't want to play for the Rockets. They released him, lands in OKC, which is awesome for Derek.
It's like dying and going to heaven.
Exactly. And Fisher, who has played the role player in LA for a while. I mean, yeah, he's hit some pretty big shots for the Lakers in years past. He's been a very big part of their championship runs, and he is a veteran voice. Like I said, he's the president of the Players Association. So putting him in an OKC uniform with a very young, very good squad out there in OKC is awesome for the Thunder, and that's a very big pickup. Durant.
All right. Let me go through these games real quick, and I'll get to a couple for you. The Nets, by the way, the Nets fans out there that are listening to the show, and I'm sure there's a few of you.
The soon-to-be Brooklyn Nets.
Yeah, they won 102-89. They beat the Charlotte Bobcats, who are probably the worst team in the league.
Definitely the worst team in the league.
Chris Humphries had 20 points and 16 rebounds.
Chris Kardashian? Is that what you meant?
Yeah. Deron Williams had 19 points and 14 assists. The Bulls won a really tight one with Toronto. They were up four late. The Bulls rallied to tie. They went into overtime. They won. Luol Deng scored at the buzzer. I mean, right at the buzzer.
Joakim Noah got ejected in the second half, too.
Did he?
Yeah, they did most of that without Noah, who's a big role player for them.
Yeah, that couldn't have helped them. But they win that game. You know, Deng and Watson both had 23 points each. In a game that went back and forth the entire game, and they won in overtime. Dirk Nowitzki had 31 points for the Dallas Mavericks. Jason Terry had 24. Marion had 12 points and 15 rebounds as they won. Again, Indiana beat Milwaukee 125-104. George Hill had 24 points and 5 assists, no relation to Grant Hill. Roy Hibbert had 16 points and 9 rebounds. Roy Hibbert, a former Georgetown Hoya. And, I'm looking. Indiana's got a decent team. Golden State, who a lot of people are crying about this year, they beat the Sacramento Kings 111-108. A guy named Klay Thompson had his season high, 31 points, and David Lee had 22. Now, there's a cat named DeMarcus Cousins who had 28 points and 18 rebounds in a losing effort. Yeah, it's his 28th double-double of the year.
He's a beast.
I mean, that's pretty impressive. And, is Sacramento going to do anything this year, Roy? I don't think so.
It is
the West.
Yeah,
they're not going to make.
They're too far out of it. No, they're too far out of it.
All right, let's talk about the NFL right now. The meetings, the owners' meetings, start today in Orlando. I've been looking at all these people on ESPN starting at about 3:30, 4:00 this morning our time, and the big talk, of course, is the New Orleans Saints. Everybody wants to talk about setting down some guidelines and some rules, and how are they going to police this? Are they going to let the league just have absolute power and do whatever they want? You know, I don't know.
Well, Bruce, you know, we will get into Bounty Gate and the Peyton Manning on the other side of this break. But for the first time in generations, the dream of home ownership is being threatened. Realtors, members of the National Association of Realtors, are here to represent you and protect home ownership. And like I said on the other side of the break, we're going to get into Bounty Gate. Peyton Manning here on AM 1230 WFAS. I'm going to do it right now. I'm going to talk about the back, New York, here on AM 1230 WFAS. This is Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. And like we said, we're going to get into a little bit of Bounty Gate, some Peyton Manning here on the NFL, which Bruce really is our bread and butter here. We make that no secret. And so, Bruce, do you want to just jump right into it? Do you want to tiptoe around the idea?
Yeah, the first thing I want to do, you know, we're going to talk about Peyton Manning here in the next few minutes, too. But the thing I want to talk about, as far as, you know, what happened with the New Orleans Saints, is this was a three-year ongoing process that the NFL has made no bones about, that they have been, you know, looking into. They have sent out, you know, feelers. They have had discussions with the New Orleans Saints. You know, they had even had discussions, from what I understand, with Greg Williams. Benson and Sean Payton evidently didn't even get back to the league on a couple of instances. And I think this just really upset Roger Goodell. Now, I give Roger Goodell a hard time, and I'm going to continue to give him a hard time, because until he, you know, becomes a great commissioner, I'm going to comment on some of the things he does, because the NFL is such a big part of society in the United States, and he's got to be a guy that everybody can trust. And I'm pretty sure we can trust him. But one thing I don't like that happened there, Roy, is, Sean Payton basically lost between $5.5 and $7.5 million. They're not sure how much, because, you know, it depends on various situations with his penalty. But, you know, for Tom Benson to get a $500,000 fine, I mean, they're paying, you know, $30 million for free agents right now, and they're going to fine him $500K. That's like leaving a big tip for a realtor when you've bought a $10 million home. I mean, come on. Yeah, now, don't get me wrong. Realtors can't do that. But my point, I was trying to compare it to something.
I understand
like
what you're saying.
That. It's like leaving a tip at a restaurant, you know, for a guy that earned $50 tip, and you give him $500. I mean, or you give him a $5 tip.
Yeah, but
I don't think it's right, and I'm going to tell you why. The way you hit owners is where, Roy? In their pocketbook. Okay. Tom Benson, let me tell you. I know all about Tom Benson. He talked various. You know, when they had the flood down in New Orleans, a terrible tragedy where thousands of people were put out of their homes and died. It was a terrible thing. Tom Benson basically went to the league and said, I want to go somewhere. I want to move. I want to do this. I want to do that. The league said, no. You know, we're not going to do that. We're going to rebuild. You know, we're going to help you rebuild the stadium. You know, the Superdome. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. It's too important of a place. It's where we have Super Bowls, all this stuff. You know, Benson was screaming, money, 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 money. I'm telling you, you know, if you hit that guy for $10 million, you would never see the New Orleans Saints ever have a problem with anything that had to do with breaking rules. Now, if Sean Payton is responsible for what Greg Williams does,
well,
logic tells me he has to be responsible for what Greg Williams does because he's the head coach. Roy, let me finish.
I got
okay?
you, buddy.
What I'm saying is that Tom Benson is ultimately responsible for the guy under him, the two guys under him, his general manager, who should be fired, in my opinion, who's not doing a great job, hasn't signed Drew Brees anyway, and for his head coach. And I mean, Tom Benson is responsible for what Sean did. If Sean is getting fined, you know, I mean, Sean losing a year kills that guy. He's all about football. He may be the best offensive mind in the NFL. You know, he's a great guy from what I understand. He's done so much for the community in New Orleans since the floods. He stayed there. He didn't go anywhere. He had his team and Drew Brees, of all people, basically they were the head of the community helping 24/7. That's why their fans are such great fans. I think you find this guy $10 million. And now I'm going to tell you right now, if they ever have any more problems with those guys, there's going to be some lifetime stuff done to the ownership, in my opinion.
Here's why I don't agree with the $10 million or a crazy money figure. You find him the $500,000, cool, whatever. It doesn't really mean anything to an owner. I mean, it means a little bit. It means probably you can't go out and sign one of your draft picks. You also get rid of two second-round draft picks because they didn't have a first-round draft pick this season. So you get rid of a second round this year and a second round next year. That hurts in growth, okay? But the big thing here is, and when you say that you hit an owner in his pockets and he'll stop, I agree with that. But this happened in the locker room, okay? So you're getting rid of Greg Williams indefinitely, okay? So that's cutting off the head of the snake right there. You're getting rid of Sean Payton for a year. You're getting rid of Mickey Loomis, the GM, for 8 games. You're getting rid of
Mickey. How can they keep Mickey Loomis? I mean, that guy needs to go.
Okay, and then you're getting rid of the assistant head coach Joe Vitt for 6 games. Okay, so with all these coaches out, and this isn't like Sean Payton can just kind of like hang in the background kind of thing. He's out from April to April.
But Roy, let me interrupt you here real quick because people don't understand that Roy and I are in two different places now, so it's really hard for us to communicate except for going back and forth on the computer with some comments. Let me just say this about this. Sean Payton got fined, okay? He could be fined as much as $7.5 million. Him losing his salary for a year, that's going to hit him a hell of a lot harder than the owner for $500,000. All I'm saying...
Well, he's losing his salary, right, yeah, which is $7.5 million.
Which is like a $7.5 million fine. Yeah. And my point is if you're going to fine him $7.5 million, Commissioner Goodell, why not fine this guy that's going to vote for you to be commissioner for another 6 years and, agree to pay you $20 million a year. No, you don't want to do that because you don't want to piss him off that bad. Roger, get to the table. Belly up to the table. Be an honest guy. You can't fine a head coach but Roy, come on. Don't pee on my back and tell me it's raining, okay? Losing his job for 1 year is being fined $7.5 million.
Well, he's not getting paid.
Understand that is a fine to Sean Payton. Wouldn't you agree? You lost your job, if you were the head coach of the New Orleans Saints, and you, let's say you didn't know what Greg Williams was doing, and you get fined, and you lose your job for a year, and you are investing in a lot of stuff. You've bought a lot of things. You've got a home here, a home there. You got a nonprofit. I'm sure Sean has a couple of nonprofit organizations in New Orleans. The point is that this is really costing him a lot more than his 1 year.
Well, believe who's to me, say that he doesn't go join a network and do some color reporting or sitting down a pregame show?
You know what? I think he probably will. But let me just say this. A lot of people are probably going to not want him to do that because
I think everybody would want him to do that.
I don't think the league's going to want him to do that. I think we are. I think I would.
Well,
what
does the league have? The league said go away for a year. That doesn't mean that you can't go work for NBC or CBS or Fox or any of these other networks. That means you're not a coach. So I think that opens the door for that.
Roy, everybody that I've listened to on the radio this past week, everybody I've tweeted, everybody I've been texting and emailing back and forth that know anything about this deal, they're all recommending that he do a lot of nonprofit work locally in his city. They haven't said one word about anything else because I think they're assuming NFL. I can tell you one network that will not hire him. NFL Network won't hire him.
Well,
CBS won't hire him.
Obviously, NFL Network won't hire him.
Hey, ABC, ESPN won't hire him. Yeah, who's going to hire him?
I don't see why ESPN won't hire him.
Roy, they get paid by the league. The league is not going to want people to basically go, you know what? You did him wrong. We're going to do this. We're going to take care of this guy. Because there's a lot of things that can happen there.
I don't think he should go into TV. I'm just saying that $7.5 million can be made up in other ways. And
tell me how to do it, Roy. I'll do it.
I just told you. Go on. Sean Payton. You're telling me that you're going to tell me that nobody out there wants to hear Sean Payton's side of the story. He could write a freaking book about this and make money. I mean, money is not going to be an issue.
Roy, listen to me. Sean Payton makes the most money he possibly can by doing what he does best,
right.
And that's being a head football coach in the NFL, which he's not allowed to do for a year.
Right, and so by him not being the head coach, and you say that you want to hit the owner in the pocket, so if he's not... Hear me out for a second.
Well, I'm going to hear you out,
If Sean Payton is not the head coach, and you're without your assistant head coach for 6 games, and you're without your GM for 8 games, that means you're making minimal moves, if any moves. How many fans do you think you're going to put in the seats? Then you're losing PSLs. Now you're losing tickets. Now you're losing all kinds of things that generate directly towards that owner's pocket. Ooh. Whereas that $500,000 fine that you put in is now multi-millions because you're affecting the fans and you're affecting your brand. That's the point that I was trying to make.
Listen,
there.
Roy. Yeah, I hear you, but A, they don't have PSLs in New Orleans. B, New Orleans is one of the few places in the country where season ticket holders, except for the club seats and except for the boxes, can buy season tickets at a pretty reasonable price. I mean, I've been working Super Bowls for 30 years, Roy. New Orleans is a place that's full of – there's not a whole lot of white-collar people down there. There are a lot of blue-collar, grinded out kind of people, most of them. There's some industry down there, but not much. I mean, that entire area has been killed pretty much in a lot of ways by hurricanes, by oil spills, the floods that have devastated that place. I'm saying that Benson is the guy that should be paying just as much as him, and that's just my opinion. And that's, by the way, that's the name of this show, Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. Give us a call anytime you want. You can send an email to Roy. Roy, give him your email address.
You actually just reached me on Twitter at SportsManCave, and we actually can't take our calls because we are hooked up with Bruce in Arizona, so that is our phone line. But Bruce Hall's Second Opinion is brought to you by the National Association of Realtors, and for the first time in generations, the dream of home ownership is being threatened. Realtors, members of the National Association of Realtors, are here to represent you and protect home ownership. On the other side, we are going to get into Peyton Manning. We're going to get into a little bit more on the Knicks. Of course, we're going to talk a little bit more on this bounty gate. This is AM 1230 WFAS. WFAS. This is Bruce Hall's Second Opinion, and we're just going to go ahead and jump straight into one of the biggest, if not the biggest, free agent signing in NFL history. Peyton Manning is now a Denver Bronco.
First ballot Hall of Famer. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that. And, you know, at one time or another, wouldn't you say, Roy, about half of the NFL teams were interested?
Oh, absolutely.
And I think a lot of them were interested. And, you know, I called you on it, and you were right. You sent me some of the original. You know, on that Monday, wasn't it a Monday when he signed? On that day that he signed.
I think it's Tuesday.
It was this week, right?
Yeah.
The one thing that he said was, because down here in Arizona, buddy, every day is the same. I'm telling you, it's a beautiful place. If you've never been to Arizona, you need to come. You know, I probably just cost me paying for a house a little bit more there, but no, what I was going to say is Peyton Manning, if he's healthy, if he's 90% healthy, he'll help whoever he goes to tremendously, because the guy is unbelievable. Now, you know, he ended up, and you know, you and I are going to go back and forth about this, but he ends up in Denver, where one of his best friends in the world, John Elway, is. Mm-hmm. And you know, I should have read the body language and kind of how everything happened. Remember when Elway came down to Durham, North Carolina, where he was working out with David Cutcliffe?
Yep.
That was like late in the deal. That was like on the weekend. And he had just left Denver not long ago, and it was almost like Elway had forgotten to tell him something. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure what it had to do with, because I'm thinking here as a negotiator, and I negotiate. I've been doing it my entire life. Most people negotiate with their family on a regular basis, but I've negotiated in business from time to time. You don't want to ever tell somebody, hey, I'll talk to you next week, or I'll talk to you tomorrow, or give me a call, because people don't do that. People, when you ask somebody to be a part of your organization, or you try to sell somebody something, you ask for the deal. You close is what you do. And I think Elway went down there and basically closed him again. I think he went down there and said, look, Peyton, we're going to guarantee, three quarters of this deal. The only way that you don't make money, and you'll still make money, but you won't make a lot of money, is if you can't play. Mm-hmm. And I think that was it. What do you think, Roy?
I mean, I think money had a lot to do with it. I listened to, and it was Monday when the announcement came out. Tuesday was the actual press conference and all the paperwork and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I honestly, money has a lot to do with this. It has probably almost everything to do with this. Peyton Manning came out and said that, this is a great fit with John Elway, someone I really respect. They went to the playoffs. They got a lot of young weapons, blah, 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 blah. But the fact remains is that this guy, Peyton Manning, is getting a 5-year, $96 million contract, which I think a lot of other teams were kind of shaky about giving him.
Yeah, I agree. Well, remember what Peyton first said when he came out, and I think that he said it. It wasn't even a press conference. He talked to Adam Schefter or somebody. Mm-hmm. And what he said was, I'll be willing to go somewhere and work on incentives only. Remember when he said that? And don't get me wrong. He could still write himself.
It was a great starting
one
point.
Yeah, it was, but it didn't last very long, because I think his agent, Tom Condon, I'm pretty sure it's Tom Condon, I think his agent said to him, hey, look, what are you doing? You don't drop to incentives. That's our last drop. We're going to tell these guys that here's what we're looking for. We're looking for what Indy was going to pay us. And that's pretty much how Denver wrote their contract.
Yeah.
I think that Denver is a good fit. Not so much for where, him living in Denver and being with his family in Denver and, the PR in Denver. I think he felt comfortable there for a couple of reasons. Number one, it ain't New York. It ain't Miami. It's not even Washington, D.C.
I don't think Miami stood a chance, really. I mean, in the beginning, it was all Miami because it looked like they had enough cap. They had the place. And when he was talking about the incentives built contract, it seemed like a good fit. But it appears to me that in the end, the Broncos laid everything out to get Peyton Manning. They gave him basically a $100 million deal. They gave him number 18, which a lot of people don't know. A lot of people were wondering, why would Manning possibly go back to wear 16? I mean, that was a big story in Denver early in the week when they found out they were getting Manning, is that 16 is probably going to be what Manning's wearing. Peyton Manning's going to be wearing 16 because that's what he wore in college, because number 18 is a retired number with the Denver Broncos.
You're too young to remember
Frank.
Kelly Trepucca.
Frank.
No, Kelly.
Frank.
Yeah, no. I'm saying Kelly Goofball, because Kelly was the famous Trepucca. Kelly Trepucca was a basketball player that averaged 30 points a game at Notre Dame and played in the NBA for like 12 seasons. Frank is his father. He was a football player.
Yeah,
and they both went to Notre Dame. And what I'm saying is, Frank is such a great guy. He said, take my number.
Yeah,
he
called Peyton and said, you can wear 18. Yeah. It's retired. That just shows you what the Broncos went through to grab Peyton Manning. And the Broncos were in this from the very beginning. I think that has a lot to do with the decision. San Francisco going back and forth hurts them. I mean, when you go and do anything, if you're going to look at colleges, the first college you visit or the first college you go see or your first love, so to speak, always weighs in on any decision you've ever had to make. So the first.
Hey, Roy. Yeah, Roy, let me just say something real quick on this. And don't let me forget this, but Because I'm just gonna say something, because one of the things that spun off of this was San Francisco jumping in so late. You know, you mentioned San Francisco. Yeah. I really didn't understand that, because,
well, they
number
went back
one,
and forth.
Yeah, but listen to me. It was very weird, because to me, and it sounded to me like it wasn't the GM, it wasn't the owner, it was Harbaugh. You know, I think Harbaugh, a former Indianapolis Colt himself, you know, felt that if he got Peyton and he was healthy, that they were going to be able to do anything they wanted with that defense they just re-signed. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, it's unreal.
Well, on the other side of the break, we're going to get more into the Peyton Manning. This is Bruce Hall's Second Opinion, brought to you by the National Association of Realtors. For the first time in generations, the dream of home ownership is being threatened. Realtors, members of the National Association of Realtors, are here to represent you and protect your home ownership. Again, this is Bruce Hall's Second Opinion here on AM 1230 WFAS. We'll be right back. That's a rockin' hook right there. And we're back here on Bruce
Remix!
And we're back here on Bruce Hall's Second Opinion on AM 1230 WFAS. And Bruce, like we've been talking about, you are out in the Cactus Leagues in Arizona. Tell me a little bit about what you've been doing out there.
Well, I've been out here basically just, you know, taking a look at all the teams, mostly San Francisco, because, you know, I get such a close look with them, because a guy that I played Little League Baseball with, and we basically were on the same all-star team in Bailey's Crossroads, Virginia, which is a Falls Church address. Bruce Bochy was the best 11-year-old in my league when I played, and I was the best 12-year-old that year. And I was probably a foot taller than him then. A little goofy-looking kid. Great baseball player for his size. He ended up, his dad worked in the Army. They had traveled all around the world, and he ended up in D.C. for about 6 years. His older brother, Joe, got drafted. He played at Jefferson High School. I played against Joe. I'm actually older than Boach by a year, but I was also 3 years ahead of him in school. Don't ask why. I'm weird. So anyway, we got an interview coming up right now with me and Boach, and then when we get back from the break the next time, we're gonna get into some March Madness and a little bit more baseball, and I'll tell you what goes on out here. Here's my interview yesterday with the manager of the 2010 World Champion San Francisco Giants.
Saul, I'm sitting in an office with with the manager of the San Francisco Giants, Bruce Bochy, after just finishing a spring training game here. They actually had a split schedule today. They lost a tight one here in Scottsdale, and they won over at Goodyear against the Cincinnati Reds. Bruce, thanks a lot for talking to me. First and foremost, just like to ask you a couple questions. You've been, you know, a player and a coach and a manager since you were, what, about 21 years old? How many spring trainings does this make for you? Have you ever figured it out this year?
Well, my first spring training was 1975 as a player, so that's going back quite a few years. I know I haven't added those years up, but I know we're, what, 30, 36, 37 years now. Now, my first year managing was 1995, and that first year is when we had the strike going on, and my first team, I had a bunch of firemen, policemen. We tried to put a team together until we got the agreement done, and thank goodness we got it done. Then I got my regular team in there. But you know why it doesn't change? I love spring training. It's actually one of my favorite times of the season. You get to see your guys again. You get 6 weeks to prepare them for the season and get some things accomplished that you want to get done before opening day, and that's what we're doing now. And I'll say this: the players will tell you we probably look forward to spring training as much as anything, because we're back on the field playing baseball.
You really don't have that much more time down here in Scottsdale in the Cactus League. You're going to be heading back, I think, Friday or Saturday for your base series with the Oakland A's. What kind of improvements and what kind of things are you trying to get done here these last 4 or 5 days before you head back?
Well, as we started spring training, when I talked to him on the first day of the opening day, a little talk that I give, you know, we talked about a lot of things we want to get accomplished, and we need to get better. We didn't get to the postseason last year. Arizona had a great year, and there's some areas we need to improve on. Now, you look at the Giants, you think about pitching and lack of hitting, but hitting wasn't our only problem last year. Contrary to popular belief, we didn't play the type of ball that we had played the year before when we won the World Series, doing little things, moving runners, execution, things like that, hitting with runners in scoring position. Our defense wasn't quite as solid, so these are things that we talked about. And the last thing that we discussed was just our mental preparation. We had a lot on our plate last year. We had a Showtime, and I compliment them. They really weren't a distraction, but there was a lot of tension brought to the club, which they earned. But at the same time, I do think it probably took away from a little focus that needs to be there when you prepare for a game. It takes incredible stamina and intensity to prepare and be ready for 162 games, and that's an area that we want to get better at. And every time we come into clubhouse before a game, we want to start not just take batting practice and ground balls, but mentally prepare for that game and see if we can do a better job there, including the post game analysis. You know, what worked, what didn't work, and see if we can get back to where we were in 2010.
Skip, the game's changed so much since you and I both played way back in the 60s and 70s and 80s. Nowadays, the guys have got all kinds of things at their fingertips. They've got touch pads. They've got computers. They can look at pitchers. They can look at their own at-bats. There's a million things they can do. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. How well do these kids these days work on their games? Is it just like everywhere else? Are some of them much better than others? What do you think about that?
Well, you're right. There's a lot more information available, including the teaching part, and on me too. I mean, managers are scrutinized a lot more than they used to be, because you have all the information: what hitters hit against certain pitchers, or lefties, righties, sinker ball pitchers, fly ball pitchers, things like that. So, you know, the questioning or second guessing is more today than when I first started because of all this information. But, you know, for myself, I don't think you ever get away from your gut or your instinct on what you want to do. Now, as far as players, we try not to overanalyze. You know, it's the old paralysis by analysis. But we do have video. We have advanced scouts. We have more information for these guys to prepare them for a game. Sometimes it can be overdone. There's only so much you can do. You get less than a half a second to make your mind up when you swing the bat. So it comes down to working on the tee or hitting off a machine or off a coach and working on mechanics. That has never changed. That's always been there since I've been in baseball. But with that said, these guys are bigger, stronger, faster. They have more information. But it's on both sides. The opposing team does, opposing pitcher. So, you know, you're constantly having to make adjustments in order to, find a way to win the ball game.
You know, for the past several years, I know a little bit about your history. You know, you were a player in three organizations. You played with the Houston Astros, the New York Mets, and the San Diego Padres. And I know you ended up as a coach with the Padres, then ended up as a manager with the San Diego Padres. You were with them 13 years, I believe. And then things changed up. You had an opportunity to sign with the San Francisco Giants. You signed a deal with them. You come up here. Barry Bonds leaves. He's done pretty much with San Francisco baseball. Now you're building a team from the bottom up again. It seems like San Francisco has always had a good scouting department. They've always done real well in their minor league systems. They're really big about that, whether it's in San Jose or Richmond, you know, or Fresno or wherever they're playing ball. They're very competitive, and they always seem to have the best pitching. You have a great pitching coach in Dave Rigetti, who's been around for years. Last year, coming out of spring training, you looked really good. And then all of a sudden, you're one of the best kids in baseball. Buster Posey breaks a leg on a terrible collision at home plate. Then not long after that, Freddie Sanchez, who maybe was your best, one of your best hitters on the team, one of the best hitters in the league, a real spark plug for you, he goes down. You have some other odds and ends happen to you during the season. Right now, Buster Posey is back. Bruce, tell us if Buster's ready for the season. How's he doing right now?
Well, but really, Posey is playing right now like nothing happened. He's not showing any effects from that home plate collision. He's catching well. He's swinging the bat well. The last hurdle he had to jump was running the bases. He had trouble turning on the bases, but he's doing that now. And you know, he caught six innings last night. He played six innings of first base today, which we plan on doing this year to give him a break from behind the plate. But I'm very excited for Buster and the progress he's made. That was a long rehab, a long road he had to walk down and to get back to playing. And I know he was probably more excited about coming to spring training than anybody because he missed a lot of time last year. And it's great to have our cleanup hitter back, our catcher who led us to the World Series. His presence in the lineup and in that clubhouse means so much to this club. So he's good to go. Before we leave here, he'll catch nine innings. He'll go back-to-back games. And we have opening day, we expect him to be ready to go and really catch the first four games before we have that first day off.
That sounds real good. You've got pretty much your entire pitching staff coming back. You know, you've got Tim Lincecum, who just signed a sweet deal, a two-year, $20 million deal. He's back for 2 years. Matt Cain is really a stalwart on your staff. He's a big right-hander, has thrown for 200-plus innings 6 years in a row. He's the oldest kid on your team that's been here the longest amount of time. He's only 27 years old. He's back. You got Ryan Vogelsong, who had a great season last year. First really full season he ever had. You made a trade, I guess, with Johnny Sanchez. He got out of here, but you ended up bringing in a really good outfielder, Melky Cabrera, who has had 200 hits last year. He's only 27 years old. Bruce, let me ask you a question. Right now, do you feel like your pitching staff is pretty much as good as it's ever been?
Well, we think so. You know, when you talk about the Giants, you know, the first thing you talk about is our pitching. That's our strength, and we need these guys to, you know, to have the type of year that they had in 2010 and last year. Really, when I went into the season last year, I was concerned about the pitching and the innings they logged the year before and the workload that was put on them pitching up until November 1st. Lincecum pitched that game when we won the World Series, so I didn't know how they would hold up last year, and they really had overall a better year. So we're very comfortable with where we're at, and thank goodness for Vogelsong because he had a breakout year for us, which we needed last year. Not that we got anywhere, but that gave us depth, and that allowed us to move Johnny Sanchez so we could get outfielder who we think will help produce some more runs here, and with Zito being really our fifth guy, I think he's going to have a better year this year. But it's pretty nice to have a number five starter who probably will throw close to 200 innings this year. That's again our strength. Our bullpen we kept intact. Wilson, who got injured last year, he's good to go. He threw in the minor league game today, and he's back throwing 94-95. Has that cutter going. Romo we'll be setting up along with Lopez, Affelt, Casilla. So we feel like we kept our pitching intact, which we really wanted to do. In our division, it's really pitching strong, and that's why Arizona won last year. And so We were excited about the guys that we have here, and we think they can have as good, if not a better year than last year.
You know, one guy I didn't mean to leave out is Madison Bumgarner. I mean, I've seen this kid pitch since he was 18 years old in Augusta, Georgia, when he threw his first game ever. And this kid, at the age of 21, set some kind of World Series record down in Texas when he threw that shutout, which puts you up 3-1 right before you put the Texas Rangers away and won a World Series ring. I didn't mean to leave Maddie out, but I see you guys building this team, honestly, around two guys right now. And there's two guys that hopefully will be with you for another 10 to 15 years. That's Madison Bumgarner and Buster Posey. Is that a mistake, me kind of feeling that way?
Well, no, I think you have to look at those two young players as, you know, our young core, our nucleus of guys that we will be building around. And, you know, I throw really another name in there, a Brandon Belt, maybe a Crawford. You know, these guys are young players who we think are going to help us stay successful. And in order for you to continue to have success on the field, you have to have good young players coming up through your system. And getting back to what you talked about earlier, our scouting department's done a great job. Brian Sabian, who has a background in scouting, going back with the Yankees, really believes in that. And because these guys, you know, your payroll can only stay or go so high. And when you're signing Timmy to $20 million, Matt Cain's contract is up. Well, eventually, you're probably going to have to make some changes there, and that's why you need these good young players that we have coming up.
Listen, I know we're going to wrap up here because you got a million things to do. Nobody understands how hard spring training is. Since I come out here every year, and I talk to you for the most part every year when I come out, and I appreciate you talking to me, Boach. You know, you get up pretty early in the morning when you do this. Some mornings you're up at 5:30, and a lot of people don't understand that. You play games at 1 o'clock, you're done at 4, but then you're doing work until 6, 7, 8 o'clock. You go to bed as early as you possibly can. Let's finish up on a couple of things. You got two or three really good young kids in the minors, and you know who they are. And there may be more than two or three. There's two or three I've seen on the minor league fields in the last few days that I've been here. Who are you real high on this year that's probably not going to start with a big club?
Well, I think I would start with a guy that we brought up last year at the end of the season, September, is Hector Sanchez, switch hitting catcher. Got rookie of the year in winter ball this year in Venezuela. He's had a terrific spring, 22 years old. You know, he could help us lighten the load on Buster Posey and put him at first more. So he's a guy that we're really high on. This Brandon Belt, who was up and down last year. Those are probably two of the guys who are right on the cusp of being everyday guys. Now, I can go down back to our number one pick last year, a young shortstop named Joe Panic, who we think a lot of, and I think he's going to shoot through the system real fast. We have another kid, Heath Embry, power arm, closer-type stuff. He's knocking on the door, so it's nice to have a guy like that. He's, you know, he's like a Brian Wilson. He's got some meanness to him, and he's coming at you at 97, 98 miles an hour, and that's always nice to have, particularly when you can find a guy who can pitch late in the ball game to help you win that game.
Right. Looks like Brandon Crawford settling in at shortstop. Finally, you brought a couple of guys in here in the last couple of years, veterans that didn't really do the job, and it looks like B-Craw is kind of the guy you want. If he hits 260, 270 and makes the plays he makes at shortstop, you're going to be pretty happy with him, aren't you?
Well, he's our best shortstop, and with pitching being your strength, you know, we need to catch the ball, and so we're going to go with Brandon. I think he's going to surprise some people with the bat. We're not looking for him to try to do too much. He'll be hitting in the 8-hole, but we just want him to play a solid shortstop. He's had a very good spring. I think he made his first error today, but great hands, really accurate with the arm. He's got a great way about him. If he takes an 0-for-4, he doesn't let that bother him. He doesn't let that affect his defense. And so he's a guy that's going to help solidify the infield and cover some ground out there to help this pitching staff.
Listen, Bruce, I really appreciate your time. I know we both got to get out of here. This is Bruce Hall with Bruce Hall's Second Opinion from Scottsdale, Arizona, the home of the San Francisco Giants Spring Training Complex. We'll see you next week.
And Bruce, on the other side, we still got a lot coming up. Tell everyone a little bit what we got coming up on the other side.
Yeah, real quick. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. You know, it's like really weird here because when I'm into the mic, I don't hear it that much. I'm gonna talk a little bit more about the Giants briefly. I'm gonna go over some of the spring training stuff. Some of the local kids from some areas that I'm familiar with. We're gonna be talking about March Madness, Roy. You're gonna be getting into your bracket a little bit. What's left of it. And me too. I mean, that killed me yesterday. But we'll be back here in a minute. This is Bruce Tall on AM 1230 WFAS.
And for the first time in generations, the dream of home ownership is being threatened. Realtors, members of the National Association of Realtors, are here to represent you and protect your home ownership. And like we said, we'll be back on the other side here on AM 1230 WFAS. Here on AM 1230 WFAS. And Bruce, like we said on the other side, we were going to get into some March Madness here.
Yeah, we are.
Talk a little bit about our brackets and what is left of them. And I don't know about you, but my bracket is not really that bad. I'm actually still in contention for the championship in the little bracket league that I got going on.
Well, you know what? Before you get into that, let me just tell you how hungry I am right now. Because I'm starving. I've been up since 3:30 in the morning, 4 o'clock. And, God, I wish I was in Larchmont, New York, so I could go to Augie's Family Italian-style restaurant. Augie's was voted once again the number one spot in Westchester County for family Italian cuisine. That's Augie's restaurant in Larchmont. Get over here and get something to eat. It's the best food I've ever eaten. It's Italian cuisine. Talk to me about your brackets. How many you got left? And, you know, we got a big game today. I just noticed that the line just jumped an entire point in Carolina's favor. Kansas is minus 1.5 now, Roy.
Well, my bracket is looking absolutely beautiful, actually. I'm still in the,
you don't have Carolina, do you?
I do. I'm still in the 80. I'm still in the 81 percentile.
Yes.
And I have in the Midwest in this game. I'm perfect. I have my bracket's not perfect, but this game is looking perfect. I have UNC Kansas in this game, and in the South, I do have Kentucky Baylor. So in today's two games, I called it. And
you had Baylor? Had Baylor.
Yeah, I have Kentucky Baylor. Yep. I had Baylor beating Notre Dame in the last round, and we know
but
that.
But you've got, but you, you got Kentucky going to the, you got Kentucky going to the finals, right?
I have Kentucky over Baylor, and I have UNC over Kansas, and then I have Ohio State over UNC to play for the big ship. But I had Marquette, not Louisville. So I had Ohio State, Marquette in the big dance, in the big game, with Ohio State winning. So I'm still alive, but Marquette hurt.
Yeah, I've got Kansas. I like Kansas winning today, and I'm going to give that as my pick of the day as a handicapper. I've been watching them. They have played so well in the last month, period. I see Bill, Self taking Kansas. Carolina's, they don't have their point guard today. Mm-hmm. He's not going to be playing.
Yeah, Kendall Marshall. Well, his status is, quote, still up in the air. But,
he's not going to.
Yeah,
he's not going to be very effective.
I don't see him going. He did practice though.
Yeah, he did, but he didn't. He hardly dribbled with his offhand, is what I heard.
Yeah,
and he, And he tried to shoot with his right hand. He had trouble.
It's going to be rough. So, it's going to be rough.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when you almost break your wrist, I mean, it's pretty tough. But in this day and age, I guess they can get you ready. You know, one thing I wanted to finish up with on my interview with Boach, I just wanted you guys to talk. We go back to 1966, and I'm just going to give you a little history about what Boach did. He was one of these kids that, you know, he was always athletic, and, you know, his father was, you know, would tend to do everything that the kids needed to do. But, you know, he grew up, didn't really get big at all until he went away, until he moved to Florida when he was 16 years old. He moved to Florida. He was actually a point guard. He was like you and Christopher, your brother, Roy.
Yeah.
He was a really good basketball player. Christopher was a very good point guard.
Yeah.
Could shoot, too. He could play the one or the two. But Boach was probably his size. He was like 5'10". You know, 5'11", wasn't a big guy. And then all of a sudden he grows like 6 inches in a year, and he did not make his high school basketball team his senior year, and because he was kind of in between positions. So he went out for baseball again. He started playing baseball again, and he went to junior college. I want to say he went to Brevard, or he went to Seminole. He went somewhere down in the state of Florida, and he played a year, and he signed out of JUCO with the Houston Astros, and you know, went to camp with the Astros, moved up pretty quickly, and he caught guys in the major leagues like Nolan Ryan. They were on his staff. J.R. Richard, you know, Mike Scott. These guys were all stars. You know, Phil and Joe Niekro. I mean, Boach was one of the best receivers in the league. I think his lifetime average was around 240. I think he's got, I don't know, 38 lifetime home runs. But he was a great student of the game, a great ball player, and everybody you ever talked to talks about how good of a catcher he was. Anyway, he ended up with the Padres on a team that almost won a World Series. They got beat. And he played with Tim Flannery and a bunch of guys out there that were pretty wild. Eric Schau, and then he ended up coaching. Ended up as a coach in A ball, then Double A. Then he was a Triple A manager in High Desert in Las Vegas. And then the next thing you know, he ends up Jimmy Riggleman. For all you people that know who Jim Riggleman is, Jim Riggleman was the manager of the San Diego Padres. Well, when the Seattle Mariners broke, They fired somebody, or it might have even been when Seattle – no, they were already a franchise team. But he ended up – Riggleman took the job in Seattle, and the job became vacant in San Diego. Guess who got it? Boach got it. And he ended up managing that team for 13 years. And I'm going to interview Tim Flannery, his third base coach, who's a great guy. He's a surfer. He's a guitar player. He's a musician. He's all kinds of things. Boach and Tim Flannery have literally been together for like 25 years. And he and Kevin Towers were together for almost 30 years. Now, Kevin Towers is the general manager of the Arizona Diamondbacks, who won the National League West last year. Mm-hmm. And their complex, Roy, is right down the street. And I'm going to be getting an interview with Justin Upton, it looks like. I'm going to get an interview. They share a stadium with the Colorado Rockies. Spring training is a blast. If you're a golfer and you're a guy, you got to come to spring training if you can get away for a week. Because what you do is play golf at every different resort for a great price during the morning hours, and then at 1 o'clock you go see a ball game. Ball game's over at 4. You go back to the hotel room, watch some TV, take a nap, get up, take a shower, and go to dinner, and go out and party, do whatever the heck you want. There's not a better family vacation than spring training. There's not a better individual dude and girl. There's just as many women out here by themselves, guys that are single out there, as there are guys that are by themselves. So, you know, spring training is a lot of fun. But that's where Boach and I go back. And I didn't see Boach again after he was about 16 or 17 till he I was actually at you know who the Tidewater Tides are, right?
Sure.
They're the Norfolk Tides now in the International League.
Okay.
It's a AAA team that the New York Mets have had for years, and it's down right off Interstate 64 in Norfolk. And I was up there visiting a girlfriend or something, and when there's a ball game, I don't care if it's a high school game, a college game, a rookie league game, or a major league game, I'm going. So I go to this game and I'm watching the ball game, and I paid pretty good money, probably cheap back then, $6-$8, to sit behind the dugout. And then I hear this name, Bruce Bochy. I just heard his name. Well, anyway, he pinch hit, got a hit, ended up, I saw him, I watched him, run it out. I didn't say a word to him. Then he went down to the bullpen to catch a bullpen. And I walked down there and I looked at him, and he didn't know who I was, because I had changed quite a bit too. I mean, I probably had a beard, real long hair at the time. And I said, "Bruce, I'm Bruce Hall from Little League." And he looks at me and gets this big old grin on his face and goes, "I remember you." And I'm going to tell you, that's the kind of guy he is. Anyway, we'll be back here in a minute. Roy, let's talk a little bit about the rest of the, of what's going on. And I'm going to tell you, if you're hungry today and you're anywhere near Larchmont, New York, you got to go to Augie's Italian Family Restaurant. That's augiesitalian.com on the internet. Look them up. Go down there. It's the best Italian food I've eaten in years. We'll be right back.
And on the other side, we are going to be talking March Madness. I'm going to tell you why I need Tyler Zeller to absolutely step up today. And this is Bruce Hall's Second Opinion, brought to you by the National Association of Realtors. For the first time in generations, the dream of home ownership is being threatened. Realtors, members of the National Association of Realtors, are here to represent you and protect your home ownership here on the other side of AM 1230 WFAS. And we're back, New York, here on AM 1230 WFAS. This is Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. We're going to jump into some NCAA March Madness, which has almost taken the back pages of this month with Peyton Manning, Tim Tebow, or I should say this week, with Peyton Manning, Tim Tebow, the Bounty Gate. It's been pretty crazy week, and it's almost like March Madness isn't March Madness this week, although we do have some pretty big games. We had a big game last night with Ohio State and Syracuse, and we got a big game tonight with or today with UNC in Kansas, which that's my big game.
I tell you what, I love listening to you. When we're in the studio, we should be in separate rooms, because I listen to what you say a lot more when you're not in front of me. Because when people are in front of you, I don't know if you have this problem, I look at them more than I listen to them. I don't know.
I am a striking figure. That is,
yeah, you do. You definitely are striking. Hey,
my eyes,
Roy,
are up,
I got
here,
a,
Bruce.
Roy, Roy, I got a question. Are you hungry? Because if you're anywhere starving. If you're anywhere near Larchmont, New York, anybody listening to this show, go to augiesitalian.com. That's augiesitalian.com, and either order carry out or make reservations for dinner. Augie's, for the best Italian family cuisine in Westchester County. That's Augie's Family Italian Restaurant. You know what? When I leave, as soon as I get off the phone, I'm not going to take a shower. I'm going to go find a Taco Bell or something and just chow down. I'm so hungry. But anyway, Roy, I think Kansas is going to win it all. You think Ohio State?
I do have Ohio State. I called Ohio State before the tournament even started.
Jared Sullinger
is a beast.
I dropped Kansas before the tournament started, too, because I liked them when they were the number 10 team in the country. Mm-hmm. I thought they'd end up being like number 3, and I really thought Kansas would end up a number 1 seed, and they didn't, right?
Yeah, well, you didn't have UNC a number one seed.
You got to understand, I hate Carolina. I'm not going to give them.
You're an ECU boy.
We hate Carolina. Look, when I wrestled in college, we shut them out 4 straight years when I was in college. So, and that's in wrestling, though. That wasn't in football. Yeah. They beat us in football every year I was in college but one.
I love how the little schools point to the
it's not
the
a little school.
Little
we
sports.
Got we don't have a little school. We got it's a North Carolina State-supported school. We got 28,000 undergraduate kids there. It's not a little school.
That's cute.
West Virginia's a little school.
West Virginia's bigger than that.
West Virginia's a little school. I mean, you know,
we have more kids than ECU. We do.
You have more than 28,000.
Yeah, I think we're up near to like 31,000.
Yeah, but aren't half of them on work release or something? No, I'm just kidding.
I love it when the little guy. I love it when the little schools talk S. It's hilarious,
yeah,
man.
I
liked
it. And you know what? We back it up too. When Pat
do
Dye
you?
Was there. Oh, let me tell you.
Well, you're
not old enough to remember coaches like Pat Dye, who was at East Carolina before he went to Auburn.
If I'm not old enough to remember it, then it's probably not relevant.
No,
ECU and they're.
You're gonna.
Did they make tournament this year? Did they play in a BCS game this year?
They haven't been in a basketball championship game in their conference since 1980. They suck.
Irrelevant.
They're
irrelevant.
Terry Holland, and if you are an East Carolina alum and you want to know why they're so bad, give Terry Holland a call one time. He wasn't such a big – he had a great team at University of Virginia. I want to say they won a national championship with Ralph Sampson in the 70s when my wife was there. But I got to tell you something, you know. And UVA is an ACC school, and yeah, you know the ACC is the ACC. But East Carolina's going to a lot of bowl games in football. They're known for baseball.
Did they go to the Champ Sport Under Armour Association Mako Tire Bowl?
No. Worse than that. If you remember a year ago, Roy, they were in the Military Bowl and they lost to the University of Maryland. As a matter of fact, they were Ralph Friedgen's last win
punching bag
because his guy they were terrible. They had no defense.
Well, enough about ECU. Let's jump into these.
Oh, I don't want. Well, you're the guy who got off on a tangent.
Yeah,
about
I think it's funny.
You act like you're wearing baby blue and white. You act like
today.
You're one of those,
baby blue.
You know what we call them? Tar holes. That's what we call.
Well, today
them.
I'm a tar hole. If you want to, whatever you want to be.
Well, you can be one. There's not a lot of them in New York.
And I'm hanging my hat on Tyler Zeller, man. Tyler Zeller needs to have the game of his life today.
Hey, I got dinner at Augie's Italian Family Restaurant. Me and you, pal, with a guest. And I got Kansas even up. Will you take Carolina even up? They're a 1.5-point underdog.
Yeah, that's fine.
I just made some money then. We'll probably lose by one and I'll win. No,
well, Tyler Zeller, last game, UNC beat up on the Ohio Bobcats, which
fair.
Nobody's.
They beat up on them big time. They went into overtime. That's how badly they beat them up.
Well, Ohio, they've been upsetting some people this tournament. They deserve to be there,
talk about small schools. They almost lost to a small school.
No, they did. I mean, they went into overtime, yes, but in overtime, Ohio scored one basket. I mean,
will somebody tweet at Sportsman Cave and tell Roy just how out of his mind he is, please? This is Bruce Hall, and this is the name of this show, which I haven't said much today, is Bruce Hall's Second Opinion, and I have to listen to Roy Edwards' Second Opinion all the time, and I actually like it. Roy, listen, it doesn't get smaller than the University of Ohio, but I have a confession to make. I lost to a guy from the University of Ohio in the first round of the NCAA Wrestling Championships, and he was tough as nails. But you know what? But Ohio's got some of the best wrestling in the country, and they evidently have some pretty good basketball, because didn't they have like four teams from Ohio in the NCAA tournament?
I mean, they beat some good basketball teams. They beat Michigan and Beeline's three-point and shooting Michigan Wolverines.
Michigan stinks. They're terrible.
They were good this year. They were good this year.
They shouldn't have been in a tournament.
They were a 4 seed, Bruce. Come on.
Ohio should have beat UNC. If they'd have beat UNC, you could have written Ohio's ticket for the next 2 years.
Yeah.
I think.
Well, Ohio, they beat Michigan. Then they beat a South Florida team who was very underrated out of the Big East. They were a big physical
team.
They were good. They're a good basketball team. They beat them. And then they ultimately lost to UNC, who – preseason was the number one team in the nation, so you can't really fault them. I mean, they had a good run. But my point is,
weren't they tied like at the end of regulation?
Ohio, yeah, they won the overtime.
So for the listeners and me, explain how UNC beat them up the other night.
Well, I mean, it was really
you. Just never mind. Just keep going, Roy. You've already made your point. Go ahead.
UNC, they were up 7 at halftime. They were controlling the game for the better part of the first half. And then I think they went into the locker room and were like, hey, we're UNC, that's Ohio. And they came out and let Ohio crawl back into the game. I mean, Ohio had 41 points in the second half. UNC scored 34 points. To me, that tells me that there was absolutely zero defense played in the second half of that game. I don't know if UNC got tired. They didn't really use much of their bench. They only had three guys come off the bench. One guy who only played 8 minutes off the bench. So their starters were running the entire game. Tyler Zeller played 40 minutes. John Henson played 38. Harrison Barnes played 40. Reggie Bullock played 41. I mean, those are big-time minutes from guys in a big-time games. I mean, they relied completely on their starters, where Ohio played incredibly deep. They off their bench 24 minutes, 18 minutes, 10 minutes. So their starters were going a lot less than the Tar Heels were, which, you know, I mean, it showed. They seemed fresher in the second half. So
Bruce is gone, by the way.
Is he gone?
Yeah, I think he got kicked out of his hotel room.
Yeah, well, that's
fine.
We
only have like 3 more minutes anyway, so anything bad you want to see about him?
Bruce, I mean, to tell me that Michigan should have made the tournament, come on, Bruce.
I have him on my phone.
Slay back a second.
We'll just put him on speakerphone.
We don't need him on speakerphone. Anyways,
Yeah, you're on the air on my phone.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I know. I'm off the air.
Yeah.
Well, no, you're not. You're on the air right now.
Well, UNC... Oh, well, yeah, like UNC, it's no question. It's no question they're a little short. They're banged up. They got a bunch of hurt guys, who are big time players. So now they're gonna have to lean more on their forwards, which is why I say Tyler Zeller has to have one of the biggest games of his life today. And this is the UNC Kansas game. I haven't even touched on the Kentucky Baylor game yet, but I mean, UNC. They have to feed the ball to Tyler Zeller. Tyler Zeller and Reggie Bullock, these guys have to be on the same page today. They have to be working if you want to stand a chance against this Kansas team who a lot of people thought could have competed for the number one seed. I think I had him at a one seed at one point. And their big guy, their big name, Thomas Robinson, down low, a forward, had 18 points against a decent NC State team in their last game. It's going to be a bang bang match. It's going to be Tyler Robinson. It's going to be Tyler Zeller, Thomas Robinson. Sorry, they're going to be going at it today. And whoever wins that matchup, whoever can keep the other one in check, that's who's going to win this ball game. And UNC has to stay out of foul trouble because, like I mentioned, they're already missing two of their big name guys. Their bench is already short. So I mean, they're going to have to stay out of foul trouble in order to stay fresh. They're going to have to be doing some work down low on the boards. Yeah, Bruce.
Hey, Matt.
You're on the air.
We can hear you, Bruce, kind of.
All right, that's great. Hey, listen, this is very interesting. I just want to shout out to somebody. I saw a kid. This is because I told a kid I'd shout out to him on the phone. Kid that's going to end up in AA from the University of Virginia. His name's Jared Parker. He's an outfielder with the San Francisco Giants. I'm going to interview him. We're going to have him on the show next week. But he's from Stafford, Virginia. Well, you know where that is. It's like 45 minutes south of us. And he's going to be playing in Richmond. And how cool is that for his family when you're a San Francisco Giant and your home major league park is 2,800 miles away. But when you're in the minors, at least for one season or part of one season, you're going to end up in, 45 minutes from your parents and your friends.
That is
so
cool.
Jared, good luck. Good luck this season.
We're looking forward to that interview, Bruce. And today, I got the Baylor Bears taking down the Kentucky Wildcats. Kid Gilchrist, today is your day that you're done, buddy. I'm sorry. The Baylor Bears are taking it home. And I also got the UNC Tar Heels taking down the Kansas Jayhawks. Like I've already said a billion times, Tyler Zeller, you're going to have the game of your life today. This has been Bruce Hall's Second Opinion, brought to you by the National Association of Realtors. For the first time in generations, the dream of homeownership is being threatened. Realtors, members of the National Association of Realtors, are here to represent you and protect your home ownership. Thanks for stopping by with me, guys. It's AM 1230 WFAS.